This is Women's Focus that you're in tune to right here at KUNM. My name is Carol Boss, with you up until 2 o'clock, at which time it will be Raisis to take you through the afternoon. I want to introduce to you my next guest. In fact, this is part of the series that I'm doing, Revolutionary Soup, which I began, I think it was in February. I try to have a segment, and pretty much have done that every month. And very generally speaking, it's wide-ranging conversations about food and our relationship with food and with each other and with the environment. And I think we've had some pretty interesting discussions these last few months. And as part of that, I'm really happy to welcome a woman I've heard a lot about and I have never met before. We're meeting for the first time this afternoon, Zoe Wilcox Edrington. Zoe farmed and raised herself, as she says on her website, in Illinois' Mississippi River Valley. She began studying permaculture in 2001 at the Crystal Waters Permaculture Village in Australia. She studied and taught sustainable agriculture for 2.5 years in Zambia, in Africa, with the U.S. Peace Corps. And on moving to New Mexico, she mentored under Jim Brooks for 2 years in drylands permaculture techniques. And in the last couple of years, Zoe has been partnering with her husband, Bart Edrington, and they run Mother Nature Gardens, a demonstration urban farm and learning center, and Living Edge Landscaping, a sustainable and edible landscaping company. She teaches in the Mother Nature Gardens Albuquerque Backyard Farming series, and we've had Albuquerque Backyard Farming certainly represented on this program, as well as the Southwest Permaculture Institute. And she and Melanie Rubin, who's been on this program before, are currently completing a book titled Urban Farming for Drylands, which is coming out in the spring. Is that right?
That's right. February.
So thank you so much for being here, Zoe.
Thank you, Carol.
I'm glad to meet you. You know, there's been times I've been looking for guests, and I can't tell you how many times folks said, oh, you got to get Zoe Wilcox. Edrington is actually a tongue twister for me for some reason.
It gets a lot of people.
It gets a lot of people, especially when it's a Zoe Wilcox Edrington. Well, I did it. So how long have you been involved? And one thing that we are going to definitely talk about, we're going to talk about probably a number of things, but certainly about urban farming. How long have you been involved in actually growing? And what does it mean when you say you farm-raised yourself?
Well, I was born and raised in more of a conventional farm where, you know, it's wide expanses of land, huge tractors plowing soy fields and corn fields next to me, and it was fairly isolated. I loved the experience of being in nature and growing up so close to nature, and it really impacts my work, and it's very core to my work, is I really want to help people connect and have that really beautiful presence that nature gives. And I want everybody to have that experience. But what I love about urban farming is that it doesn't have the isolation that rural farming has. You know, it's everything I love about farming, which is connecting to nature and being a part of the process of creating your food. But also, you know, you have neighbors next door.
Right.
I can, you know, in the mornings I can have herbal tea with honey from my bees, and then I can walk a block to the bus stop. And I really see that. I see that as the direction our community needs to go in order to be sustainable.
Well, let me ask you something. So your parents had a farm?
Yeah, we called it, in Illinois, it was called a bachelor's farm or a weekend farm.
Oh, really?
So
you didn't actually...
You sustain yourself, but, you know, you have other income coming in.
Right, but you live there.
Right.
So what were you doing? What did you do as a young person on the farm? Did you partake in the chores?
Yeah, absolutely. We had a huge garden that took lots of maintenance and weeds. You know, water is the big issue here. In the Midwest, you never watered, but you got so much water from the skies, you had to weed all the time. And we raised cows and sheep you know, it's ironic, we are conventional farmers, and so we used a lot of herbicides and pesticides. And my father was a large animal veterinarian. And so, even, you know, I'm so dedicated to organics, but the truth is, growing, my first job was working hundreds of head of cattle and injecting them with antibiotics. So, I mean, I've seen agriculture from both sides.
So you're saying your first job as an adult, a young adult?
No, as
or
a,
as a as a child
a young
on the farm.
Yeah. Up.
Your father taught you how to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Uh huh.
So then, when I went to Australia, it was my first experience with the idea of organic farming.
What made you go to Australia, just for that purpose?
No, my husband Bard went. We had met doing research, wildlife research with birds, and he had gotten a job in Australia researching bowerbirds. And he was just a boyfriend at the time, but obviously I was smitten. So I followed him, and I found woofing, willing workers on organic farms. And in that way, he was in one spot in Australia, and I could go around to these different organic farms. And Australia is the home of permaculture, so that's why I was introduced to permaculture.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And yeah, Bill Mollison is an Australian, and so it was very popular. And, you know, I was gathering these smittens of information from each farm, and then I ended up at Crystal Waters, where I studied it officially.
So why don't you, this is a good time since you're mentioning that, to explain to listeners what permaculture is, for those who are really not familiar with the concept.
Sure. Permaculture, it is a large concept, and it's a bit difficult to explain because it changes in every new situation you're in. Permaculture to me is a way of designing that addresses every unique piece of land as an island. So when I go into a new piece of land, I want to listen to what the land is saying. And if I'm trying to harvest rainwater, for example, it's going to be different in every household. There's going to be techniques that run through, but in permaculture training, you really learn to observe the land and respond to your observations. Often in permaculture, it's taught, you know, say you're in a new home or you just want to transform your home into something that's living in a growing farm. It's often suggested just to wait a year and observe and see how the rains come and what happens when the rains come. This is a really good time, actually, for people interested in harvesting rainwater, not to take action, but just to watch when the rains come, what happens? Where does the water go? Where does it pool? And so permaculture teaches you all those things and how to maximize your production with the lowest amount of input. So it's a really efficient way of addressing land issues. And honestly, it can be addressed not only to land, but in businesses. It's not limited to land, but that's how I use it.
I know from taking a look at your website, and by the way, if you just joined us, my name is Carol Boss on Women's Focus, and my guest is Zoe Wilcox Edrington, who is an urban farmer along with her husband, and she is a permaculture consultant.
Mm-hmm.
She teaches classes. I know from looking at your website, it seems like when you moved to Albuquerque, you might have had a vision of, you know, not being in the heart of the city and perhaps having more land. But it sounds like, as it turns out, you are on a piece of property with, what is it, 3/4 of an acre or so?
An eighth of an acre. It's a large city lot in Atrisco, what used to be the Atrisco Land Trust.
Uh-huh.
And so it's beautiful. When we showed up, we only saw the size of, I mean, we just saw the size of the land. My husband and I traveled 10 years together in different countries, several different states within the U.S., learning from other people doing organic farming, and had just always daydreamed of our five to 10 acres. And when we came to Albuquerque and started looking around at 5 to 10 acres, we quickly learned that that was out of our financial, our financial abilities. So we took what we could get, and I'm so glad now, because an eighth of an acre, we've been there 4 years, and we just never stopped doing projects and improving. And I think if we actually had 5 acres, it would have been so overwhelming. You know, it's important in permaculture and in urban farming to start small and start as ripples. You know, if you think of ripples in the water, and if your home is in the center and the first ripple is just outside the home, you know, you concentrate on that area in the first year. And then the next year you move out a little bit further. And in 3 years, when those first two areas are cultivated and growing and you've got the irrigation systems, then you move out a little further. And it makes it accessible and not so daunting. Because big pieces of bare land can be really intimidating.
And that's the thing that a lot of people find, you know, they get daunted by.
Right. And it was fun. We've taught classes and had open houses at our farm for 4 years. And I really think the people who came at first, although I've learned so much in how to teach that I've become a much better teacher in these last 4 years. But the people who came at first, it was really helpful. And some would come back the next year because they could see it in beginning stages. Now, if you came to my house now, I would hope you would be impressed at how much is growing and how developed it is. But it's hard to come into that situation and then go back to your home, which is maybe all pea gravel, and know where to start.
Right.
So I just always think the smaller, the better, and the closer to the home, the better, is the best place to start.
I think I said on the last show I had a program on a segment on cool weather vegetable growing. And I swore that this summer that I was absolutely going to grow something, and the summer came and the summer went pretty much. We're still in summer technically, but I mean, mostly, I mean, I didn't do anything.
It feels like fall.
It felt like, and it made me very sad really, because that was a promise I made to myself. So I decided that I was going to, towards the end of August, I was going to do cool weather growing, and I was going to do containers, because I think I felt like I had to contain this effort so I wouldn't get overwhelmed at this point. And so I'm doing that, and it's really actually, and I did put a couple of things in the ground too, and it's really exciting. So, and I don't feel that this is a daunting kind of thing to be doing right now, and I really understand how people feel overwhelmed. People do have fears about trying to grow something.
Yes, and I think people have fears about not so much getting dirty, but just getting in the dirt and where to start.
Exactly.
And I think that's brilliant. Container gardening is brilliant. And I started to do it in my front lawn. I had 2 seasons of attempting to grow things, and they weren't taking. I'm right under a Siberian elm tree, which are highly competitive. And so up front, I started gardening in containers. And it's really fun to get broccoli from a beautiful container with, you know, some pansies mixed in with it. So you've got color and food. And it does feel like this is something I can do. I can't manage this whole yard, but I can manage this tiny little spot.
Right.
And then you can grow from there.
Right. You have to start somewhere.
Right.
Yeah.
And it has been a hard summer. It was a windy,
yes,
long, windy
yes.
season. And a very hot summer. But I think, I don't know what's going to happen in the near future, but I think we're lucky to get a cool spell. And it is the time to put in seeds, broccoli, cauliflower, all your greens, Swiss chard, spinach, lettuces, radish, most of your root crops, radishes, turnips, those can all go in the ground now. And with simple row covers, you can be harvesting in October. And what I found is I love gardening in spring, and I love gardening in fall in Albuquerque. Summers are just brutal.
Right.
And it's hard to be out there watering under 100-degree sun at, you know, even 9:30 in the morning. It's already getting up into the 90s. And so each year, you know, everything always changes every year, not only according to the weather, but according to what you learned last year. And what we learn is we really – when I say we, Bard and I, we really like the cool season growing, because we do have a long cool season. We have a short winter, and with row covers, we start seeding for the spring in February, and we're eating out of our garden at the end of February. And that's – row covers increase the temperature underneath by 6 or 7 degrees. And just that much, in keeping the frost off, will produce a great crop of lettuces and root crops, and you don't have to bother with the bugs. The bugs aren't an issue in early spring and fall gardening, and you don't have to water as much.
Well, when you put on row covers, are you talking about in ground as opposed to raised bed?
You could do it on either. So what
how do you do that then?
We
for those
do,
people who are interested.
We
like
experimented with a lot. You need ribs. So the row cover itself, it's called Remay at times. You can get them at the urban store, Plants of the Southwest. They sell it by the yard. And there's a thin layer for summer to shade the vegetables underneath, and there's a double layer for winter gardening. So you would want the winter gardening Remay, and it's just a synthetic, breathable fabric that cuts the light, but not entirely. And so once you have the fabric, then you need what I call ribs over the garden beds.
Is it like a hoop thing?
Right, exactly. To lay the fabric over. So the permaculturist in me wants people to use whatever they have at the house already. So, I mean, use what is there instead of buying something. If you want to buy something, we use Remay bars that have been bent into a U-shaped, I guess, upside down. So, and PVC piping also works very well, but I have been cautioned about that material.
Putting it in the ground?
Yeah, and the production of it is fairly toxic.
Yeah, I was wondering
about
that.
But it is easy to find scrap PVC pipe. So one end goes in one side of the bed, and of course the other one is bowed over to the other side, stuck in the ground deeply, and we put rocks down to keep them in the ground. And then there's several of those across the bed, down the length of the bed, and then the Remay goes over top. And, you know, you can use landscape staples, but you can also just use rocks or bricks.
Oh, okay.
To keep the Remay close to the ground, on the ground.
Because I have read some things online about row covers, and I've seen PVC mentioned a lot, and I was wondering about the leaching of any toxic substances.
Well, apparently there's a documentary called Blue Vinyl. I haven't seen it, but it does. What I've been told is that it is a fairly toxic material, and so there might be some concern about leaching into the soil.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know the specifics on that.
So what do you think about – how long have you been in Albuquerque, Zoe?
6 years.
So there's been a lot happening in 6 years in terms of so-called urban farming.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the growing – growing is a growing movement. It's all over. But, I mean, it seems to be pretty impressive as far as I'm concerned here in Albuquerque. And there's lots of organizations like Albuquerque Backyard Farming began, and there are others, and it's all part of an effort, I think, to encourage people for us to grow our own food.
I think Albuquerque presents our weather presents a bit of a challenge in gardening, and I don't know if that has brought people's consciousness to a higher state around food, that, you know, we can't depend so much on just local farms, or, I mean, on food that comes from outside the city. And, you know, there really needs to be a person-by-person transformation of the way we produce food. I'm not sure why it is so popular in Albuquerque, or, you know, I haven't been anywhere else in the last 6 years, so I'm not, I think there's movements popping up all over.
There are movements popping up, and in different areas. For example, the whole notion of rethinking school lunches for kids, mm-hmm. of what they're serving kids. And I did do a show a couple of months ago on school gardens. Mm-hmm. There are more and more, they're not, you know, tons and tons of them, but there are a lot of individuals in schools who are wanting this kind of program available for kids to actually be able to get outside at school and put their hands in the dirt and actually see things coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I remember someone saying, I think I've said this on the radio before, you ask some kids, so where does your food come from? And the response is, where does food come from? You know, some of them have responded, Costco, you know, Walmart, actually,
mm-hmm.
without understanding the concept of you put a seed in the ground and something comes up.
And there's water and sun and time,
right, and the,
something else magical in addition,
yeah,
to
the
that.
Yeah, the magic and the delight and excitement of kids seeing something that they were involved in planting actually coming up.
Mm-hmm.
I feel that way. I planted some things, and in like 4 days, there were things coming up. I was beside myself.
Uh-huh. Well, I think there people are responding to what's going on around them. You know, there is more trauma in the world right now. There's a lot of natural catastrophes there. We have to be truthful how weather patterns are changing and how that's going to affect our food systems, and what if our food system from our source outside our town is something happens to it and we can no longer get the food in. So I think people are responding to that, and in times of trouble, and maybe it's just me with my background and my closeness to the earth, but I think it is a natural response when people see trauma to want to get closer to the earth. You know, when I was in Zambia, it was a very eye-opening experience to learn the history of Zambia. In the 70s, late 60s, early 70s, there was a copper boom, and they discovered copper, and so there were these towns grew up overnight, and people flooded in from the rural areas into the farm, into these new towns to work in the copper mines. And they made good money, and they had, you know, one farmer we worked with out in the village, shoeless, tattered clothes. He told the stories about how he and his wife would go to golfing lessons, and they had multiple cars, and they would go swing dancing. And this was their life experience. And then the copper industry fell. The prices fell. In the 70s, the Zambian kwacha had the same power as the English pound. When I arrived, it was 2,000 kwacha equaled $1. So in the 80s, when the copper market crashed, the country was impoverished overnight. And people returned, and in one generation, people returned back to their rural areas, but in that generation, they had lost all their history of how to farm, and they were struggling so dearly, trying to feed their families, and it awaken me to the idea, my goodness, what if we don't know how to grow our own food? I mean, with natural disasters happening more frequently, with weather changing patterns, we really have to reconnect to the earth. And I think people are responding intuitively to that. I think that's what this movement is a mm-hmm. response to, is things, there is a raising level of unsurety. That's my experience.
Yes.
And in response, we need to be closer to where our food comes from.
Right. And then we have things happen, as in last week, that large cantaloupe scare. Did you hear about that?
I didn't.
Okay, it was in the newspaper. I didn't hear it necessarily on the radio. I don't watch TV. But there were three people who died in New Mexico from, I forget the name of the bacterial, Letaria or something along those lines. And they traced it to, so there were these warnings about not eating cantaloupe if you're considered at-risk individual, which would be older individuals and maybe people with, low-functioning immune systems or something like that. But they traced it to an area in Colorado. And they said if you do eat cantaloupe, to actually scrub the outside before mm-hmm. you open it, and you actually use, dish soap.
Uh-huh.
So basically they're encouraging people at this time not to eat cantaloupe. And we're hearing those kind of things happen from time to time, mm-hmm. which what that's indicative of, I don't know. I don't know what created this particular thing, other than it was, they found the area where it was coming from. I don't know what it has to do with what's in the soil or where this place was located, whether it was near cattle ranchers or anything. I mean, I didn't delve into what it's all about. But in terms of what you're saying, in times of maturity, there's also, in some ways, our food's becoming unsafer, and people do want, in times of unsureness, to be able to have some kind of sense of control of their
right.
own lives. And I think
right.
That is what you're talking about in a sense. But also in terms of if we think about health and making sure that we're getting quality food,
I think you can create a passion for growing food in your backyard from so many directions. It can be, we don't know exactly what's in our food anymore, and we don't know, we have rising health issues. Maybe you need more serenity in your life and you just want a meditation. I mean, you can come, my book partner, Melanie Rubin, is from Manhattan Island, and I think we're such an interesting partnership, because I have this very rural, deep connection with the earth, and it was really the core of my growing up, and that's what I'm bringing, and that's what I want to spread to people. I want to spread this connection that is fulfilling and comforting. And she's coming from Manhattan Island and has just as much passion as me for the same thing, urban farming, but she's coming from a sense where she wants to see people have better nutrition and healthier lives, and also community. I've really seen how urban farming and people getting interested in food and where their food comes from creates community. And we need all those things. That's another thing about, in times of uncertainty, if we're locked in our houses and we don't know our neighbors, it increases our sense of unsurety. But if we think, I have several friends on this block, there's a comfort in that.
Mm-hmm. We don't have that much time left, and I can't believe this has gone by so quickly, but I do want to ask you about, I know you do consultations, and I know that you teach, and mm-hmm. if you want to talk a little bit about that, we just have a few short minutes, actually.
Okay, about consultations?
Yeah.
Or teaching?
Yeah, both of them. I mean, you teach this year you did a drylands urban farming. So when you say drylands, you're referring to living in desert-like conditions?
Right. So maybe I could just go through what I would do in a consultation.
Yeah.
So I would look at, first thing we would look at is water and how the water sheds off your roof, how the water comes into your property, because in dry lands, we want to catch 100% of the water that falls on our property. And because, and we want to store it either in cisterns or in the ground. And so we don't want to shed any water. So we would look at that. We would look at your soils, what trees were growing in your place, where the proper place, how, where can we take the water so that we can grow food in a naturally wet area. You're going to kind of create a wet area. You take it from the water from its source and you direct it right where you want to grow things. So that's always an interesting process in every new landscape. And we would look at the sun and how the sun affects your home and how your gardens can cool your home. And we would look at noise and wind, how to make your garden more peaceful, how to protect your plants from the wind. And we'd look at your trees and how to grow with the trees you have. So those are some of the topics that would come up.
Why don't you give your web address, website,
sure,
for people who are interested in checking out the things that you do?
If I could give a couple of them, mothernaturegardens.com is our demonstration urban farm and permaculture consultations. We also have www.livingedgelandscaping.com, which is where we do contracted work on other people's homes. And with Melanie Rubin, we've been working with ABQ Backyard Farms. And also, if I can just mention the 2012 Edible Gardens Project. You know, 2012 has a lot of hype with it and what's going to happen in 2012. And we want to make that hype something really positive. And we want to get 2012 registered urban farms on this website, and you can sign your grow, whether it's your container or...
I was just going to ask, it could be just people doing a minimal amount of growing.
Right.
Yes.
Right, some broccoli and lettuce in a container or something much more elaborate. And that's at abqgardens.ning.com.
Okay, very, very good. Wow, Zoe, I'm so glad to meet you, and I can't believe
Thanks.
This really went by very, very quickly. What are you growing, by the way, now?
We've got carrots coming up. We've got carrots coming up, and you know the end of our summer crops are fruiting, eggplants and peppers and tomatoes. But then we just have the starts of our cool weather crops. So the chard and the spinach and the carrots are just popping out of the ground now.
Nice. So thank you so much.
Yeah, well, thank you. Maybe you can come by and visit.
Yeah, I would love to do that. Zoe Wilcox Edrington, that's Edrington. And again,
Mother Nature Gardens.
Mother Nature Gardens.
Yes. Everywhere she can.
Yeah, that's right. This is Women's Focus that you're in tune to right here at KUN.